Is it time?
It's time.
All right. Cue the music, maestro. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are seeing the beginnings of signs of fall. And among those beginnings, I suspect, are, well, here and there, an occasional maple is starting to turn red. And you probably have noticed that the spreading dogbane is turning bright yellow in the underbrush. This is a small, well, 12 to maybe 24, I've probably seen some close to 30 inches high, bright red stem, dark green football-shaped leaf. If you pluck a leaf off of the stem, you'll see white sap. It's got alkaloid sap. It's got deep bell-shaped white flowers that are lined in pink. It's a very attractive plant to all sorts of nectar-feeding bugs, butterflies, and moths. And it is one of the first plants to turn in the fall, and the leaves on some of them are turning yellow even as we sit here and speak to you this morning. So those signs of fall are coming. Another sign that I am seeing a lot of, and I thought I should mention, because it's not really a sign of fall at all, but there are a lot of trees out there. As you drive along, you're going to see them here and there, bright yellow as they change from green to yellow. Those, in the most part, in fact, I would say 99% of the ones that I have observed are elm trees, and they are suffering from Dutch elm disease. Elms seem to grow for a short period of time, and then the Dutch elm disease catches up to them, and they die, and many have died in the last 2 years around here. And right now, if you're seeing bright yellow leaves as you drive around this morning, chances are you're seeing elm trees that are on their way out. I had one in my yard that died as a result of Dutch elm disease, and it was 37 years old. So it was almost as old as my house, and it was a nice, healthy tree. Unfortunately, once the elm disease found it, that was it. So maples, elms, spreading dogbane, all signs that fall is coming. Well, the elms are just the sign that the Dutch elm disease has caught up with them. But the spreading dogbane and the maples, other signs of fall. Well, the goldenrods are blooming. And that brought to my attention the need to try to figure out which was which, Canada or tall goldenrod. And boy, there's quite a discussion. If you go to the website Minnesota Wildflowers and type in tall goldenrod and then read the chapter, it's actually probably a page worth of discussion about goldenrod and the difference between tall goldenrod and Canada goldenrod. And each of those has two subspecies, and the four seem to be largely similar in all appearances. There are some differences in the length of the bract under the flower, and there are some differences as related to hairs on the underside of the leaf. Apparently, the tall goldenrod has hairs along the veins and on the underside of the leaf in between the veins, and the Canada goldenrod has hairs only on the veins. But boy, it's a tough one. So from now on, when I talk about goldenrod, I'll either be talking about Canada goldenrod or tall goldenrod of those two. It could be either one, and the difference is quite subtle. So at any rate, that particular goldenrod is blooming. I did learn in the discussion that it is not the Canada goldenrod that gets the gall. the elliptical gall. It is rather the late goldenrod or the tall goldenrod. And the fly that lays the egg that creates the gall that you see on the goldenrod stem is species specific. In other words, that fly is bound by chemistry to the plant. And it won't lay its egg in a plant that is not of the species that it's looking for. And that species tends to be the tall goldenrod. So that may help you. Other signs of fall, well, the flat-topped asters are blooming. Small white flowers, very high. All of the flowers are right at the peak of the plant. So you get this flat-topped appearance. And flat-topped goldenrod or grass-leaved goldenrod is blooming. And again, the flower is very flat, very, all of the blooms appear to be at about the same height on the plant. And of course, the grass-leaved or flat-topped goldenrod is easy to identify because it has this long, narrow leaf, which looks a lot like a blade of grass. So all of those flowers, the goldenrods and the asters are blooming right now. There's, I think, the purple-stemmed aster may be blooming. I saw some purple asters the other day and I was in a canoe and not close enough to get out and actually look at them to see which species they might be. But the asters are beginning to bloom. The goldenrods are beginning to bloom, and both of those are fall flowers. Also among the fall flowers, the tall prickly lettuce, the sow thistle. Both of those are yellow dandelion-like flowers that grow fairly tall, some over 6 feet. But if you see a flower that looks like a dandelion and it's on a plant that's about 3 to 6 feet tall, it's probably prickly lettuce or sow thistle. And either one of those could be producing that plant. The other tall plant of fall that is blooming right now and has a very much of a thistle-like leaf is the blue lettuce, and tall blue lettuce, and it is gorgeous. If you go out and look, you'll see this sky blue flower that seldom opens. Think of a dandelion that's about to open, all closed in tight by a deep green bract and just the tips of the yellow showing. Well, in the case of the tall blue lettuce, that's as open as it gets. It's this tight little cluster of blue at the top of what looks to be a fairly closed in bract. And then that flower will fertilize, and you'll see like these little cottony tips of the hairs that bear the seeds at the top of that blossom. So that's tall blue lettuce, and I've seen that stuff over 9 feet high. So it is gorgeous and has lots of flowers on it, lots of flowers at the top, but never open the way you think it, like a dandelion might open. These guys, they emerge, you see the blue, but it never really opens up like you might expect a flower to open up. Looking at our Season Watch page, lots of interesting things on there. I think the most common of the sightings in this past week has been the, and I'm not sure if it's Pelecynid or Pelecynid wasp. It is a black wasp, very thin-waisted, with a very, very long ovipositor. The ovipositor can be sometimes more than 2 inches in length. And it is that ovipositor that is fearsome to grubs, scarab beetles and the like, the June bug. This moth will hear these or sense these beetles below ground as larvae, as grubs, and it will drive that 2-inch long ovipositor into the ground and lay an egg on the grub. And the minute the egg hatches, the maggot begins to chew its way into the grub and then will destroy the grub from the inside out, sort of like the movie Aliens. And those wasps are very common right now and likely to be seen just about anywhere. So check out the Pelecynid or Pelecynid wasps and enjoy them. They're solitary. They will not sting you. They might threaten you with their ovipositor, but they won't sting you. And they're quite peaceful, really, and quite interesting to look at. The final note for today is one that caused my wife some anguish. A dark fishing spider. And most of you would turn and run when you saw this spider because it's about, well, leg tip to leg tip. It's about 3 inches across, maybe 2.5 inches from the leg tip to the leg tip. It is our largest spider. It's pretty much harmless. Well, one of them, a large female, came into the outhouse the other day with her little egg sac. And then this egg sac was, as big as the end of your little finger, you know, from the bottom of your fingernail and around. So it was a fairly large egg sac, right? And this is she's protecting it. She's holding it. This is last Friday. She's got this egg sac underneath her, and she's got a couple of her 8 legs wrapped around it. And she's looking sort of at the end of her life, and I thought that she was going to be dead shortly, but she is alive, and she was alive this morning as well. The egg sac hatched open yesterday, and hundreds of these itty bitty, I mean, less than an eighth of an inch, probably a 16th of an inch long spiders are crawling around on the window in the outhouse. And they're just this little dark cloud of little spiders, and they'll all move, and then they'll all sort of freeze, and then they'll all start moving again. And it's just the most interesting thing. I've just been fascinated by the whole experience, but my wife is convinced that all 400 or 500 of these spiders are going to take up residence in the outhouse, to which I would say, well, if they do, there won't be another insect within 100 yards of that place, because a spider as big as they are going to grow to be has a pretty good appetite. In fact, the dark fishing spider is known to take tadpoles, small minnows, and other large prey, and do it with gusto and with a healthy appetite. Being sort of on the side of the spiders, because, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and spiders are known to eat deer flies, and anybody eating deer flies is okay in my book. But this spider, this dark fishing spider, who has sort of protected her egg sac this long and is now sort of in the process, I believe, of dying. She moves every day. She moves slightly, like she's moved in the last 48 or 72 hours. She's maybe moved like, maybe 6 or 8 inches across this little web that she's constructed to kind of protect her egg sac. But the little guys, they're dispersing and wandering about, and I wish them all well. I hope that they succeed. And in the meantime, I'm pretty sure that I'll have the outhouse to myself, because I don't think anybody else wants to go in there with the spider that large hanging around. That's the Phenology Show for today. By all means, if you have observations you'd like to share, please pass them along to us.